You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. The True Blue Playoffs Plus team has taken leave of us, and they've got a lot of work to do before tomorrow night's games. Adam Hoge is going to be in Green Bay covering the Green Bay Packers as the Bears take them on. And, of course, Carm's got to get ready for dealing with however what the aftermath is with Obi Cause and Hamp.
Always a scary thought.
It is. It's a little. I get nervous for him when I hear them yelling. But he wrangles the conversation and the emotions very well, I think, for the whole show. So that'll be tomorrow night after the Bears game's over. And then after that, there will be the True Blue Playoffs Plus coverage with with Andy Mazur and with Carm. And then I'll join them later on because I bring more of the fan stuff. I'm so excited. I know a lot of fans didn't sleep well. I was reading stories about the anxiety. I'm just so excited. I guess I have that cautious optimism, and I'm realistic. I know it could go south at any time. Yesterday I was a little forlorn. Did have my head on the bar, not drinking, just happened to be.
I saw that
Iron Horse. Yeah, I was a little bit despondent. I would say that, but you know. It was only the third game. We've got seven games, folks. Now we are tied 2-2. Start all over again. It's a fresh start.
2-3 now.
Exactly.
And it's so nice now because it's just a better feeling. It's a true better feeling than it was in 03.
Well, it's a better feeling even coming out of Saturday off of Saturday's win because the first game we won against the Dodgers.
Right.
So then we lose 1-0. So those two games were kind of like, okay, this is a battle. We're in the, you know, this is a good.
Well, you hope it's a battle.
Well, it's a good face-off. I'm saying it's not like we weren't being blown out like we were with the Mets last year. They had their cleats on our necks and we never got up again. Right. You know, 1-0. That was, you know, we could deal with that. All right, fine. You know, they got that one. It was a pitching duel that we just went down on. But 6-0 last night was gruesome. It just was.
It just was so hard that these bats that have been hitting
and
doing so well all season
quiet.
Just were,
so
were
cold.
Just were so cold.
So silent. And tonight 10-2. It was very exciting. So this is what we needed. Not just the win, but a crushing win.
Absolutely.
Because why, Craig? You gotta announce your presence.
With authority. That's with full authority.
With authority.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's what we needed. It helps. It helps the team, you know. It helps the fans. It's everything.
And the team tends to bounce really well after a big win like that. They tend to float on it.
Oh, I like that. I'm floating.
You know, for anyone that felt like that was the Cubs being the Cubs that they had grown up with last night when they lost the game and, you know, they were kind of falling apart, tonight really probably helped everyone forget about that, because this is a Cubs team that I don't think you've seen a lot of that comes back from a loss and just crushes an opponent. So that's got to be the best possible way to win after something like
that. I think so, too.
I know a lot of fans probably felt a lot like it was when it was in 84 and you win two games and when you only need three, and then you go to San Diego where you can't ever.
Could you not say Garvey to me? I'll leave the room if you say something like that.
You realize this is the first time ever that the Cubs have won a playoff game on the West Coast.
That's right. That's right. It has been.
So that's another curse broken.
It is the 84 Cubs that gives me it gives me night terrors. So that's me, like I'm just consoling myself. And I think that since that season, I distanced myself a little bit as a kid. Because I was crying. I was inconsolable when we lost against the Padres. I was too young to understand.
You're younger than I am.
I remember when Griffin, about 5 years ago, I took him to his first Cubs game. And this is obviously before we were in the position we are now. You know, we were a struggling team 5 or 6 years ago. And Griffin started crying. We lost against the Cardinals. And he just started crying. And I said, oh, sweetie, if you start crying now, it's going to be a very long life for you. And that's something I think I realized when I was really little and the Cubs lost against the Padres. I was like, the next year I was mad. Like, I just couldn't. And they went on strike. Remember?
Right.
And so I was like, okay, that's it. I'm out. And for a couple of years, it took me a while to come back and enjoy baseball. Like, as a fan, I played baseball. I was out playing every single day I could. Any day you could throw the ball against the wall or play catch or swing a bat, I was out there. But it took me a while to come back to the Cubs. So maybe I have that sort of I have cognitive dissonance when it comes to, like, I separate all of that. I'm still upbeat about it.
That's really big words for 1 o'clock.
Let's see what Pumpkin's got to say about the Cubs. Hey, Pumpkin, how you doing?
Kiddo, hey, you summarized it. You're upbeat. So am I. You know, looking at the last three innings, I looked at all those, I don't know, $500, $1,000, $10,000 seats behind home plate.
Is that what they're going for back there?
I don't know. I think they're expensive. You know, they're a bunch, I'm sure. But they were there was about, I don't know, 45% vacant after the seventh inning. Utterly amazing.
That's L.A., though. They do that. When their team is down, they're leaving
because
they have other things to do.
Amen. They're going on the 101, you know, fight the traffic, whatever. They're kind of blasé, if you will.
I have family who lives out there, and it's just, it always happens. Your team is down, and it just empties out. And they were saying before, there's only one road out of that stadium. So these people are going, well, we're losing anyway. Let's get a head start on trying to get out of this place.
I would love for Esmeralda to have to go sit in one of their traffic rooms there to just like see how much madness. Esmeralda, when it drizzles.
I would laugh and laugh and laugh and then come home.
Yes, they lose their ever-loving minds when it drizzles, when there's any rain. Like, that's it. All meetings are canceled. Don't bother leaving the house. They can't deal with it. Joe, are you a lifelong Cubs fan?
Yes, I am. Well, Pittsburgh, you know, I've lived in seven states, whatever. But my allegiance right now is Chicago. Been here for the last decade plus. But I got to admit, my daughter lives out in L.A. She's a Dodgers fan right now.
Oh, wow.
I'll pardon her for that. But
yeah,
nevertheless,
no,
I'll live with it. But nevertheless, it's a commitment you got in Chicago. And we have it. They don't. You know, they're on the 101, if you will. Got to get to work the following day. But the thing that amazed me is those very expensive seats were vacant after the seventh inning. That blew my mind. I just couldn't stop thinking about that.
Yeah, it was. I wonder if like people in the other seats are like, oh, can we just wander over there? Will anyone notice if we just sit back behind the home plate?
Well, we used to do that in the 70s here.
Yeah.
There was no seats.
There was a couple blondes that ambled down to those seats. They were in the hot seats, if you will. And nobody bothered them, whatever. I thought it was fantastic. There's been a guy that's been there repeatedly for the last two evenings. He's in the wheelchair, if you will, right by the aisle, right behind home plate. You can see him on the left-hand side.
Wow. Well,
and he's a fan. He's a true fan.
Yeah. Well, there you go. It would be great to be able to go. I thought about going out to Los Angeles this week, but there was just no way to get it done.
So did I. Yeah. Adios, kiddo.
All right. Have a great night, Joe. We are hanging out with John Sobel, who has brought us some tasty treats from Max and Benny's. We started out with some Cubs cookies, and we've got we got the jerseys, you got Arietta's, you got Bryant and Rizzo's.
Right.
Someone ate Bryant already, didn't they?
That was probably Carm.
Go get yourself some W flags out at Max and Benny's. Tell people where they can find you online.
We're at maxandbennys.com.
And your restaurant's located?
461 Waukegan Road in Northbrook.
And when we come back, we'll make these two cookies yell at each other. Where are your emails? You made Russia go through my emails. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining me is John Sobel from Max and Benny's. He's brought us not one, but two boxes of cookies. The first box has all of our Chicago Cubs jerseys. We had the Arietta, Bryant, and Rizzo. He also had the W. Fly the W, baby. And
white flag time.
I love it. Those are probably the ones that people buy. Do they buy that the most?
That's the most. We also do cupcakes.
And the cupcakes. Yes. But these travel better.
They travel a lot better, yes.
I am holding in my hand the head of Hillary Clinton, and in the box are also Donald Trump's. You have made some presidential candidate cookies as well. What are you guys calling these?
We call candidate cookies.
Candidate cookies?
Yes.
And which ones are you kind of taking the temperature of voters by which ones you sell more of?
Well, we started
this. Because my guess is you're selling more Donald Trump's, by the way.
We started this with Obama's first election.
Okay.
It was the first time we did these caricature cookies.
So were there McCain and Obama's?
Right.
Okay.
We actually did the vice presidents as well, because when you have a Sarah Palin, you had to do them. So we did that.
So Biden and Palin?
We did Biden
That's
and Palin.
Great.
We also had a lipstick, a pig with lipstick on, because just we had to use it. And that year.
You put lipstick on a pig,
right,
it's still a pig.
Exactly.
Yes.
And that year, and then the subsequent 4 years later, Obama's cookie outsold the other cookies.
Really?
Yeah. Didn't matter what we did. Obama always outsold. So that was the temperature that we always did. Whichever cookie outsold was going to win the election.
And how are we doing?
Trump is right now
smashing Hillary.
Smashing Hillary, yes.
Interesting. By how much? Do you have a margin?
It was 3-1 the last time we
three to one.
It was 4-1 for a while. It's starting to get a little closer.
Did you? So I watched the debate while I watched the Cubs game, which was very hard. If anyone follows me on Twitter, you will see a severe mashup of tweets because a candidate would say something and then Rizzo would hit, hit something like Addison Russell hit a home run while they were in the middle of an argument. So I couldn't. I was easily distracted. So your cookies would have been very good for me during the game and the debate.
Right, I had to watch the Cub game first before I came down. So
yeah, it was. Well, I
couldn't bring you the cookies that early.
And I appreciate you bringing them and making the trip down here so late. So you are. So you guys are busy making the Cubs cookies and the candidate cookies because it's all down to the wire now for
Absolutely,
both.
Absolutely, yes. And we're also making Blackhawk cookies and Bulls cookies for the United Center.
Oh my God, so many things, so many. Yeah, you guys are available for purchase at the United Center.
Yes, they've just added a couple of carts on the second level, as you're walking up to the third or as you're going into the second, that look like the carts that go to the suites.
Okay.
And they aren't. They're just there for purchase, and our cookies are on there. So you can see a Blackhawk or a Bulls logo cookie, depending on which game you're at.
And you also are available now at Wrigley, yes?
Yeah, I'm not 100%
sure. Was it Black
sure
Market? Why you look a little bit iffy about that.
I'm not sure where they're being sold, but okay. I know we are there, and we're hoping to expand it as well. And we also had some cookies at U.S. Cellular Field, which will be changing their year as well.
What I loved, too, I love all your cookies, but when we were at Wizard World, you had Carrie Fisher. Craig, he had Carrie Fisher eating her cookie, I mean. Did she eat her cookie?
I gave it to her. I don't know if she ate it or not.
Who else did you get? You had Bruce Campbell?
We had Bruce Campbell last year with his cookie.
You had the guys from Green Arrow. You had the...
Stephen Amell?
No, the dad.
Oh.
John Barrowman. I gave him a TARDIS cookie because we didn't.
Because he's also on Doctor
That's
Who.
That's awesome.
He had done Doctor Who, so we gave him that.
Which leads me to an important question: how long would you say your cookies are good for? Because I still have my TARDIS cookie in my kitchen. Like my son, nobody wants. Like we just like looking at it. No one wants to eat it. Can you? No,
you're done.
No. I'm done. Okay,
you can look at it. I have a Blackhawk cookie in my house for 3 years.
For 3 years. So should we shellac it now? Like,
no,
should
just
we do
leave
some?
It.
Just leave it.
Just leave it.
Okay. Now
in
it's
a year, I'll get you a new one.
It's petrified now. Is that what you're saying?
It'll just be really stale.
You're just saying it wouldn't taste as good.
It wouldn't taste as good. You could still eat it if you needed to, if you were starving.
Well, that's good to know.
You could still
in
eat
case
it.
If there's some, God forbid, some horrible disaster, and all I have is my TARDIS cookie from Wizard World over the summer, I'm good to go.
You're still good to go.
But what would you suggest? What is the, from purchase, optimum consumption time for your cookies?
Within the week.
Within the week.
We're making them quickly.
Yes.
We're making them. We're selling. We're not keeping it. We're not holding on to any cookies.
So when you design a cookie, like I have the Hillary cookie in my hand, and you also have the Donald Trump in the box. Who is the artist that creates
these?
Actually,
Ben, Max and Benny. So Ben, our owner, he takes a picture, and he uses a program to draw on the computer over the picture, and he creates a caricature of that.
Okay.
And then the bakers cut out the shape of the cookie by hand. They bake them, and then after they're baked, they're put on on the table, and they beam the picture onto the cookie.
Okay,
and then they use the icing to draw it.
So by hand.
Isn't
like an assembly line or something like dropping down. You know, just the red for the lipstick, and it's one person individually painting each one of these cookies.
Yeah, they'll do a tray of just the hair.
Right. Okay.
And then
so
just like the yellow for the hair, and then so they'll do all that, and they'll do all the cookies of the yellow hair. Then they'll put that down, and they'll do another tray of the yellow for the hair.
This is going to make it so much harder for me to eat this cookie now, knowing. Although I should eat it.
It's a lot of work.
It's a lot of love that went into this cookie. A lot of artistry.
Yes, but that's why a cookie wants to be eaten.
Oh, I'll eat her. I will eat her right now. That sounds wrong. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Connie Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, and really thrilled to welcome Chrissy Yamaguchi, world champion, gold medalist, and someone who is making a lot of progress in helping young children attain literacy, which is something, you know, you think, well, they go to school, they're going to read. Chrissy, you're in town to promote your third book and talk about Dream Foundation. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being patient. I'm always very honest with my audience, so I'll go ahead and tell them that I left you waiting in the lobby, so thank you so much for being gracious and waiting, because I know you've got a lot of appearances, including schools. How long are you in Chicago for?
I'm just here for a few days, just a couple days, and hitting some schools and a couple of bookstores. And yeah, just trying to get the word out of my third book and its new release.
And this is called Kara's Kindness?
Yes.
Tell us a little bit about this book.
So it's all about Kara the cat, mm-hmm. and she's a caring cat, hence the name. And it's all about paying kindness forward. She reaches out to a friend in need and helps him out, and all she asks for in return is that he pay the kindness forward. And it kind of trickles through several of their friends, and as good karma has it, it comes full circle back to Kara, and a friend of hers helps her. And so it's just a message that, you know, having two daughters, you know, I can't teach them enough to be kind and to be a good friend and have respect for their friends, and then also the concept of paying it forward. So yeah, that was kind of the inspiration behind this book.
And when did you start writing children's books?
About 5 years ago was the release of my first children's book called Dream Big, Little Pig. Oh. And, you know, my kids were 4 and 6 at the time. So in that picture book reading phase, and it was fun to do a project for them.
And when you start developing the stories, is so much of it based on sort of the relationship you have with your kids and they have with each other?
A little bit, mm-hmm. yes. I mean, it's always trying to find what that main storyline is going to be and the message behind it. But I do try to involve the girls for sure. They're an audience and my biggest critics out there.
Are they really?
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like,
what kind of things do they pick
on? You got to use more descriptive words and, you know.
Really?
Yeah. It's pretty funny. And some of the characters are in there because of them and stuff like that.
When you start developing a story, do you storyboard at first, or do you have, like, because I actually haven't spoken to that many children's books authors, so this is a pleasure on so many levels. Do you start, you know, do you have like a foundation that you build from? You have an idea of where you want, how you want the pictures to sort of flow from the story you're telling?
I mean, I really don't think about what it looks like at all. It's really for me just the story,
sure,
and the message, and then developing the characters and making it flow for you know, what I'm trying to say. And so, yeah, that process is just kind of step by step. And then once I turn it into my editor, then he kind of gets a better picture, I guess, of like, oh, you know, we don't have to be so literal here. Maybe the illustrator can show that. And then as they work with the art department and the illustrator, it really starts to come together. So that, it's a fun process.
Oh, it sounds like it. We were talking to Chrissy Yamaguchi. She is in town to talk about her new book, Kara's Kindness. Mm-hmm. And I was saying foundation because I want to make sure I find out how you got involved with the Dream Foundation. Is this something you started?
It is. So it's the Always Dream Foundation.
Always dream. Always.
And,
that's a good thing to do, is always dream.
Always dream. And that's kind of been my motto since I was a young skater. And it's fitting for the foundation as well, because we embrace the hopes and dreams of underserved children. And the last 5 years, we have focused on early childhood literacy and bring reading programs into kindergarten classrooms. So it's, you know, reading and the love of reading and getting them interested in reading really creates a foundation for reading on grade level, and, you know, sets them up for success, not just academically, but in life as well.
And what drew you to that? Because, I mean, once, you know, you're a world champion, golden mm-hmm. medalist, everyone knows who you are, and you're, I mean, looked up to by so many people. Were you kind of looking for, what can I do with this, you know, this fame or...
You know, it was really after the Olympics in 92. So actually, Always Dream, we're celebrating our 20th anniversary this year. So
congratulations.
It's hard to believe that. But right after the Olympics, the tour I skated on benefited the Make-A-Wish Foundation. So I really got to know what it was like to be hands-on with an organization and to really be making a difference directly with the families. And it inspired me to start my own. So we established Always Dream. And it's just kind of been going ever since. So a lot of support from my family. My parents have always been very community-minded. So, you know, my mom, my uncle, you know, my personal attorney, they were all like the very first board members and helped me establish the foundation.
And 20 years, then, do you keep in touch with any of the students who have been sort of impacted by the work that you've done? Because that'd be kind of fun to, you know,
yeah.
Like
oh,
some
yes.
of them are like 25 years
so
old,
many.
26.
Well, it's only really been the last 5 years that we focused on early literacy.
Okay.
So, you know, we have helped kids from all other organizations, like for back to school programs and Hurricane Katrina victims and just, you know, a lot of different areas before we focused in on literacy. So, yeah, I'm trying to think if we, I mean, there are organizations that we still keep in touch with and are very close with just because they're kind of a personal interest. So
well, and it's a little bit like Kara's kindness where you pay it forward, and you know, I'm sure it's come back to you in so many ways that you don't even know because of how much you've had an impact on young people's lives. So it's a tremendous thing you've done.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I was very nervous, and I was thinking about meeting you, and there's so much that I imagine that when fans meet you for the first time, there's so many different things they want to say to you. What are some of the experiences that you've had with fans?
Oh, I mean, lots of different ones, I guess.
I mean, because I know that there was drama in the Olympics that you were involved in. So it's one of those things where I think that you rose above and were such a delight to so many people who were watching the Olympics.
Are you talking about the whole Tanya Nancy thing? That was actually 2 years after me.
Was it really?
Yes.
God,
yes.
So, thank God.
Thank goodness. So I was out of there before that all happened.
Well, because I think that when we think of ice skating in the 90s, people probably folded in like that. Do they make that mistake the same way I did?
Yeah, sometimes, because Tanya and Nancy were my teammates for 92.
Right.
And Nancy was my roommate, so we were really good friends. And then 2 years later, I was skating professionally on Stars and Ice at that time, and then that happened. So, I think the whole world of skating was thrust into the media spotlight at that point. And, it kind of seemed like we were all in it together.
I guess it does seem that way. And how old were you when you started skating?
I was about six.
6 years
six
old?
6 years old, yeah.
And how long before, because I read that you, because you were working so hard, you ended up having some homeschooling and then moving to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So at what point did your parents know, oh, this young lady, our daughter means it, and she's going to go places with this? Because it takes a lot of commitment and sacrifice.
Yeah, I mean, by sixth, seventh grade, I was going every day before school, 3 or 4 hours a day. And then eventually it got up to 4 to 6 hours a day. Back in those days, we were competing the compulsory figures as well, which were the figure eights that you traced on the ice. So that took up, I don't know, like 2/3 of our training time. So, there was many, many hours. And probably by junior high, it was like, okay, this is a turning point. She's competing nationally now. And they just saw how much I was passionate about it. And I was just lucky that they kind of let me go with it.
I mean, when did you start feeling, and that, how great, and thankfully they did, because so many people have enjoyed the work that you do, both on and off the ice. At what point did you start feeling the competitiveness?
I would say from the get-go.
Really? You're like, I'm going to be the best at this.
I had that competitive streak in me. Even as a young kid, I always had to get more Easter eggs than my brother and sister and everything. I think at my very first competition, and it's still pretty vivid. Like, I was 11th out of 12 skaters, and I just kind of like, oh, well, and you learn early on, you just got to skate and do your best, and it's judged. So a lot of the results are out of your hand, and you got to be happy with just how you skate, or, if you didn't skate well, learn from that. And, I still wanted one of those medals that the other girls were running around wearing. So, I think at that point it was just kind of like, oh, I get it. I got to be better than them. That kind of, got the competitive juices going fairly early, probably when I was like 8 or 9 years old.
And has that experience, the extent to which you put so much work into becoming a world champion, how does that influence your relationship with your daughters? I mean, what do you
it's
see?
Hard to say. Yeah.
Do you ever see them do you feel like that, do I let them find what they want to do? Mm-hmm. Do I, push them in one direction? Do you feel yourself sort of, navigating those waters?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I've lived it, so I know what it takes to really focus in and go in one direction. So unless my kids really show extreme passion for a specific thing, I'm kind of like stepping back and letting them do their own thing right now and be there to support them and encourage them and still instill the values that, hey, if this is where you're going, it's 100% or right. 110%. So it's hard. Our younger one, our 10-year-old, does skate. And, you know, of course, everyone around me is like, she needs to come more. Like, she doesn't skate enough and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, you know, I'm kind of letting her.
The bar is set so high with mommy.
Right. So I'm like, you know, it's her thing. And, you know, she is starting to kind of get, you know, oh, I want to accomplish this. I want to do this by the end of the year. So I'm like, okay, she's showing some initiative and, you know, I'll support that. But I'm not going to like force her to go skating like 5 hours a day if she's not, you know.
Right. Because if she loses the passion for it, mm-hmm. what's the point of it then?
Right.
Were there points throughout your career where you're like, is the competitiveness and the passion, do they kind of stay the same? Is there a point where you're like, why am I doing this? I mean, I don't want to.
Oh, yes. Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, it's not always roses and, you know, sunshine. That's for sure. And there are definitely ebbs and flows and peaks and valleys. And I think you have to go through those rough times in order to remind yourself how much you do want it or how much you love it or want to improve. So, skating particularly is a very humbling sport because, you know, there isn't a whole lot of success. And to learn something new, you're constantly falling down.
Right.
You know, you fall down, you get up, fall down, get up, fall down, get up. So, you know, it's very humbling and in that way. So, you know, in a way, it teaches you a good work ethic. But you learn that, okay, success is... It's a very fine line, and you just have to appreciate, you know, when it comes along.
And you also were a double skater. I don't know why I didn't even realize that. That has to be doubly hard when you. Obviously, if there's two of you, uh-huh. but worrying yeah. about each other on the ice or like the other relying on somebody, mm-hmm. as opposed to being a solo competitor.
Yeah, it's definitely teamwork. You
know? Of course,
yeah.
Yes.
Have a trust and respect,
right?
And
you're on the ice and you're being flipped up in the air, and
right? So my partner was Rudy Galindo, and we competed for 7 years together, and you know, we started just kind of as fun. We were 11 and 13. It was like, oh, how cute, how fun, la, la, la. And then we were both very strong single skaters and started to have success as a team, and we were kind of like, wow. And then eventually we won two U.S. pair championship. So, we were having fun, and it was, it was nice to be able to experience something different within our sport, the two different disciplines, because it was different. It taught me, I guess, how to work with someone else and how to trust them and to not blame, you know, when you're out there as a team, it's not his mistake or my mistake, it's our mistake. And, I think that was a really good lesson, I guess.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I mean, and everything that you do, you're such an admired athlete. You are always just someone that people look to. And there's a, how do I put this? There's just such a your presence is so solid. And I think people are drawn mm-hmm. to you. Do people still come up to you and like, it's got to be, people feel like I know you, but I'm not sure why I know you.
Yeah. No, actually, I do get that a lot. It's like, I went to school with you. I'm like,
that's not it.
Are you a flight attendant? I get a flight attendant a lot. Because I don't know. People travel a lot, and I don't know.
Maybe seem very friendly and helpful.
I guess.
There's a sweetness to that a little bit. And you are in town again. I want to make sure everyone knows that you have three children's books, Care is Kindness. What were the other two?
Dream Big, Little Pig, mm-hmm. and It's a Big World, Little Pig.
Oh, so what made you change from pigs to cats?
There are a few years in between
sure.
the books, and it was just time. I was like, oh, well, let's just do a whole new character. And, you know, we knew it was probably going to be a different illustrator and then the look would be different. So she's like, okay, let's just go in a new direction and start something else.
And we're thrilled that you are on this endeavor and reaching out to children with Always Dream Foundation. Where can people find out more information about Always Dream and your appearances?
AlwaysDream.org is a website, so you can find out more about what we do and how to be a part of it if you want to.
And volunteer, I bet.
Sure, yes. And just read to your kids. You know, that's really what it's all about. And, and then, you know, with... I'm on Twitter and in Facebook and Instagram if you're looking to see, you know, where I am next.
And tonight, this is Wednesday, so at 8 p.m. you'll be in Andersonville?
In Naperville. At Anderson's
Bookshop. I knew there was a Ville. Yeah, Anderson, yeah. I combined everything. Yeah. Anderson's Bookshop in Naperville tonight at 8 o'clock. At 7? I've heard it both ways, Katie. How much more running around do you have to do? You're going to a couple of schools today as well?
We'll visit a couple of schools, and it's great because I get to read to the kids and really see their reactions firsthand, and then we do a little Q&A, so it's inside books for them.
I'm kind of jealous. I never got to have a Chrissy Yamaguchi come read at my school. Thank you so much again for your time. And you could not have picked a better week to be in Chicago in October.
It's beautiful.
Really wonderful
beautiful
weather.
Yeah. Thank you, Patty.
Oh, my pleasure. Safe travels, Chrissy Yamaguchi. Find her on Twitter, on Facebook. Go see her in Naperville at Anderson's Bookshop at 7 o'clock tonight. And check out, and I know everyone can hear us all over the place. Look up for her books in stores, Kara's Kindness. Go online and find her other books as well. More after this on 720 WGN. Thank you, Chrissy.
Thank you.
I want to make sure everyone knows that was from earlier today. So she was at the Anderson's Bookstore in Naperville. I wanted to make sure that we podcast that during the day. So I apologize if anyone wanted to go see Chrissy Yamaguchi. But she is in town for a couple more days. She has other events. So go to her website, alwaysdream.org, and I'll make sure you have more of that information. But if you go to the WGN website, we have that whole podcast. There's more information about her website as well. She could not have been a sweeter, a more kind woman to interview. And it was so, I'm already gushing again, Esmeralda. I'm such a dork. I'm like, she was fun to interview. I was so nervous.
Well, also because you kind of grew up with her.
I did.
Seen her, and then, you know, you don't think
you're ever going to talk to that person.
That too, and you also think they're just like, you know, out of reach, and yeah, they're, you know, they're these amazing athletes. She was in the Olympics. But like, that just seems crazy.
Gold medalist. She was a, you know, spokesperson for all different kinds of, you know. But the other thing, she looks 20. I looked right past her in the lobby. I don't know what I expected. I just.
You're like, excuse me, little girl. Yeah,
have you seen Chrissy Yamaguchi? Has anyone seen Chrissy Yamaguchi? She was adorable. All right. More after this on 720 WGN.
Tell me something good. Tell me that you love me, yeah. Tell me something good.
I'll tell you something good. Cubs won.
Tell me that you like
their second game in the NLCS. They are now tied 2-2. Tomorrow, we're hoping that they win their third, so they come home up one game. But that's not the good thing. The good thing is that they won tonight, 10-2. It was fantastic. It was a great night to watch baseball, even if I had to watch the debate at the very same time. Craig, which did you watch? Did you get a chance to watch either?
I watched the game the whole time.
The whole time?
Yeah, I was here.
Was it exciting?
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
I mean, as someone who's not a Cubs fan, was it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, at this time,
I like baseball though.
I'm not a Cub hater at all, though.
No,
My team plays on the other side, so it's okay to cheer for the Cubs for me. I don't feel as much as you guys do, for sure. And Mark Carman definitely shows me all the time what the feels can be like. I don't have his level of feels.
His feels are painful.
They're very painful at times, and then also very joyous.
Yes,
he's like a child.
It was
pure joy.
I was disrupting Justin Kaufman's broadcast. I was so loud in the. I didn't realize how much I yell.
Well, for people like you, that's what makes it fun for people like us, is that we watch it and we know that you're going to be that happy. So that's great.
I don't know. Is it better to be a yeller alone or to be around a lot of other people screaming?
When I watch a team that I really care about, I yell no matter what.
Yeah, it's not. I'm not doing it for performance. I actually feel that way.
That's what's coming out of my body.
Yeah, I throw things. Well, you know that. I throw things.
I do. I've been thrown at.
Yeah, I throw things. Vic Vaughn, were you screaming tonight?
Yeah. You know, I heard you say you watched both at the same time, didn't
yes.
you?
Yes. So we had two screens on in here. We had the audio from the debate, and we were watching the Cubs game. And so I was like, they would be in the middle of an argument. I tweeted simultaneously Cubs and debate updates.
That's
which
impressive.
Were very confusing.
You know,
to people.
Last night I could see I was watching the Cubs game for the most part, but out my window I could see the apartment, the whole tower next to me was either watching, you know, all the apartment units were either watching the Cubs or the debate. So I kind of was doing the same thing you were.
I didn't even mention this earlier. We had a crowd of people outside the studio watching both because they could hear the audio from the debate. We had the screen on for the game. There was a young woman I met named Mara who is an immigrant. She was like almost like screaming because she could hear the things that were going on in the debate. And we had a crowd outside the Showcase studio. It was kind of cool.
Well, that's very cool.
It was very nice.
And so is that your good thing, Vic Vaughn?
Yeah, we'll go with that. Sure.
We'll go with that as your good
Cubs
thing.
Cubs win. You can't, yeah.
Cubs win. Esmeralda?
It's cold out.
Oh, you like that?
I love that.
It's sweater and boots weather.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And tights.
Craig, do I have time to ask you a good thing? No, I don't. Oh, fine. No good things for you. Go, Betty.